free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
It's Monday, March the 9th, the year of our Lord, 2020. I'm David Knight, your host. Today we're going to take a look at the coronavirus, the economic and political consequences. But there's a new element here, which I've been warning about from the very beginning. They're now talking about this in the metaphor of it being a war. And so we're going to look at who is pushing this, what this could mean. And quite frankly, I'll spoiler alert here, I'll tell you that I think this is basically a Patriot Act in development, a bio-warfare version of the Patriot Act. You know, when we look at 9/11 and you question how in the world people could believe the absurd government narrative. Yeah, we had a lot of people die. We're not allowed to take a look at how that actually happened. And one of the things that's really concerning me now is the concerted effort by mainstream press, reviving all of these just-so stories. You know, Rudyard Kipling did a lot of those, how the rhinoceros got his skin and all that sort of thing. Now telling us, going back and saying, well, you know what, let's not talk about bats. Let's talk about snakes and pangolins, if that's how you pronounce it. I don't even know. Such a rare animal. Looks like a cross between an armadillo and an anteater, but it is something that is very rare and even endangered, but still nevertheless eaten in China, because if it moves, they'll eat it. They're very poor. I mean, it's not just they're doing what they have to do to survive. But now we've got these narratives revived. Don't pay any attention to the research that was being done there at the biosafety level 4 lab in Wuhan, the only one that China had, right there at where they said was ground zero. Don't pay any attention to the fact that animals that are being experimented on there were being sold into the marketplace. Don't pay any attention to the research that was being done at UNC Chapel Hill. It was released in 2015, 2 years after the National Institute of Health was banned from funding that kind of research, gain of function, making viruses and bacteria, genetically modifying them. In this particular case, at UNC Chapel Hill, they created a chimera. They took the Chinese bat and this specific type of bat that they were worried about and combined it with a coronavirus, created a chimera, gain of function, same type of research that was being done there in China. And as Zero Hedge pointed that out about the public profile, the LinkedIn profile of the researcher at the Wuhan Biosafety Level 4 lab in Wuhan, when they pointed that out, they were banned permanently from Twitter. What are they afraid of? I mean, look at how politicized Twitter has become. They're now covering up for Joe Biden's dementia. They're now putting out hate speech rules. You talk about dementia, we're going to shut you down. And they already did. They already shut down a journalist, put him on timeout for a day because he was talking about Joe Biden's Super Thursday. Then it went viral, Super Thursday, Super Thursday. Don't forget to vote on Super Thursday. You know, I joked about it. By that time, so many people were doing it, they weren't shutting down everybody. But look, when they start shutting down stuff, they go after the stuff that is typically going to be damaging to them because it's pointing out the truth and how absurd their stories are. I still don't know what happened on 9/11 other than several thousand people died. And many more are dying because they were lied to by the government about the risks. I do know what did not happen. And that is pretty much everything the government told you about 9/11 is a lie. So how are they going to use this, whether it is real or imagined? How are they going to use anybody who dies from this to enact a permanent regime like they did with the Patriot Act? And the guy who is pushing this metaphor of war was somebody who is in that first generation of Patriot.
In a world of deceit, tell telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
It's Monday, March the 9th, year of our Lord, 2020. I'm David Knight, your host. And as I said at the top of the hour, my worst fears are now being realized as we see government officials, former government officials, people who were part of the first generation of the Patriot Act traitors, now pushing the war metaphor for this. So now we're going to have Corona War. And what's it going to be a war on? It's going to be a war on your health freedom. It's going to be a war on free speech. It's going to ramp up geospatial intelligence. You know, last week I talked about Babel Street and their program called Locate X. And if you understand what is going on with that, you see that that matches perfectly, perfectly what they are trying to accomplish now with quarantine. You put in a geofence area, okay? And once somebody gets into that area, it's going to grab their information and go back and look for weeks or months at their travel history. And then they can cross-correlate and compare that to other people. And then they'll know whose doors to go knocking on to take you to the FEMA camp. I do not want to put myself at the mercy of a merciless government, quite frankly. That's what I've been concerned about. And I'm concerned about the fear that is being manufactured in the public's mind, especially when you look at the aftermath of 9/11. It doesn't matter whether or not the narrative makes any sense. They can panic people into giving up their freedom, hoping that the government is going to protect them. And as I tweeted out today, I said, here we are, they're crying wolf yet again. Now, this may be the time that it's, I mean, that's part of the parable, right? You cry wolf enough times, and then when the real thing happens, and people need to be warned, then they don't pay any attention. And they've cried wolf with SARS, with MERS, with swine flu, even with Ebola. Except they really didn't, even when you got a disease that goes, that once you contract it, you have a 50 to 80% chance of dying. As a matter of fact, the guy who's pushing this metaphor of war said, yeah, not the CDC's 50%. No, it was 80%. In many areas with Ebola, 80% of the people would die. And they're not saying anything at all like that about this disease. But look at how they tamped that down under the Obama administration and how they are blowing this up. That tells me that they've got a different agenda here. And I'm more concerned about what the government is going to enact using this crisis than I am the crisis itself, whether it's real or imagined. Because if it is real, all that's going to do is give more impetus to the government doing things that are going to make it much, much worse, not only now, but forever, because once they put these controls on, they're not going to come off. Once they establish these precedents about taking away your informed consent, about saying the government can grab you off the street at any time. I mean, this is red flagging individuals because of a temperature or something else. So when you think that government is going to protect you against the flu war, why don't you go back and look at the Cold War, right? We had a Cold War, now we're going to have a flu war. And the government, as I pointed out last week, the book Raven Rock, the plan for the government to protect itself and let the rest of us die, that's what they did during the Cold War. Do you think they're going to do that during the flu war? Just take a look at CPAC, for example. So we have an individual at CPAC who is two individuals now at this point who have been identified as positive with coronavirus, and they were in contact with a lot of people, thousands of people at CPAC. Their identity is being kept secret, just like the quote-unquote whistleblower. Nobody will put out their identity. There are a lot of people who are there who would like to know, was this somebody that I talked to, somebody that I know? Of course, you could be exposed to it without really having any direct contact with that person. Nevertheless, look at what they did with the government officials, people like Ted Cruz and others, and the president, the vice president. They got this individual patient zero, or two of them now, and went to the government officials and said, did you have any contact with this person? Okay, well, then what we need to do is keep you under observation and so forth. We'll make sure that you get the best health care, but everybody else, they don't even know. Nobody else is even allowed to know. So you understand how this is going to play out, don't you? Real or imagined, they will use this to increase their power at the expense of your liberty, and you'll never get it back. How convenient. And of course, it's also being used as a political wedge against President Trump at the same time. Not just the economics, but other issues. Today, we're also going to talk politics. We'll take a look at what's going on with the Democrat candidates. The latest news on the communist front as well. But when we look at the economic news this morning, the markets have not opened yet. But already they have hit, in terms of future trading, they've already hit the stops. You know, once the markets respond largely enough in big swings, then they stop trading because they don't want this to turn into a feedback loop because of computerized trading. So they have stops, and they have already hit those stops. And that's worse than what we saw last week, because last week, even though we saw these big drops, we didn't see the stops hitting. Now already the stops have hit. Oil is now down 30%. I'm sorry, not 30%, but down to $30 per barrel, I believe is correct. So that's a big drop for oil. We have European countries like France and Spain heavily dependent on tourism. It's 10% of the French economy. It's 15% of the Spanish economy. And those are in free fall. We have the port of Los Angeles is taking a substantial hit. They expect their volume to plunge 15% because of the coronavirus. So this is having real consequences already. And there are a lot of demands for government to do something, especially the federal government, because you have to understand they have inculcated a mindset into the American public that every problem needs to be solved from the central government. That's why everybody's pointing fingers at President Trump. What is he going to do about all of this, right? Well, the real issue is that we have, and we believe this, even as Republicans, we expect the government to fix everything, don't we? That's why it's so important that all we talk about is the presidential election. We don't talk about local elections. We don't talk about local issues too much. It's all focused on the president, because we believe that that is the highest centralized office that we can vote for. Of course, it's the Supreme Court that really has the power. We don't get to vote for the Supreme Court, but we imagine that the president can change the Supreme Court by the people that he appoints. But of course, that is subject to them being willing to leave, or God willing to take them out. And then being able to discern from the narrow list of career bureaucrats which one of them is not going to turn into a rabid liberal statist after they become appointed by a conservative judge. I mean, the liberals have an easy job with that. And that's why the Supreme Court keeps ratcheting up further and further left, because the pool from which you can pick from are only career bureaucrats. But now we've got a coronavirus problem, or at least the perception of a problem, and it must be fixed by the federal government. And so when we look at this, the thing that I found the most alarming over the weekend is the pronouncement by Dr. Richard Hatchett. Yeah, he's now doing a hatchet job on our freedoms. He was in the White House Homeland Security Council from 2005-2006, you know, part, as I said, of that first generation of Patriot Act traitors that worked for George W. Bush. He is an infectious diseases expert. He is at the forefront of the search for a coronavirus vaccine. Ah, there lies the rub. Do you see a conflict of interest in what he's saying? Well, I'm going to go into detail about his conflict of interest. I find it amazing that Bill Gates can push vaccine test kits, which, by the way, he's going to share that information with local officials. Do you think that he could, when you swab your saliva and send that to him, you think he could get some DNA reports out of that as well? We'll be right back. Stay with us. Taking my time. Welcome back. We're going to talk about the politics and the economics of the coronavirus. But before we do, I want to talk about the war aspect. Anytime the government starts using the war metaphor, you better be careful. Because that's how they take away your freedom. That's how they grow government. And now we have Dr. Richard Hatchett, who's part of the Homeland Security Council during the Bush administration, the George W. Bush administration. And he went on the UK's Channel 4, and he had some very alarming things to say about the coronavirus. Not anything that's new, really, in terms of the health issues, but new in terms of how he wanted to use this. Let's play the first clip, video clip number 4.
I've been working on epidemic preparedness for about 20 years, and completely dispassionately, without elevating the temperature or speaking hyperbolically. This is the most frightening disease I've ever encountered in my career, and that includes Ebola, it includes MERS, it includes SARS. And it's frightening because of the combination of infectiousness and a lethality that appears to be many-fold higher than flu.
Well, you know, if you compare it to MERS, to SARS, to swine flu, and they weren't too worried about Ebola. I was very worried about Ebola. I could not believe how reckless they were in terms of bringing people in, how cavalier the Dallas official was walking into the apartment of somebody who was diagnosed with Ebola, going in without any protective clothing, not sanitizing himself at all, and then going to a press conference and so, it's not a problem. See, look, I can lick the walls, whatever. But, you know, we've had the government cry wolf so many times that when they come back and say, this is far more frightening than when I cried wolf before, this may or may not be real. Again, I still don't know, and neither do you. But they're panicking everybody, and they're getting ready to take some actions that are going to have real consequences for us, even if it isn't real. And if it is real, they are going to make things much worse by their actions. You want to say, as you heard him say, this is the most frightening disease I've ever encountered in my career. He says Ebola's mortality rate, he goes on to say, in some settings is greater than 80%, but they don't have the infectiousness that this does. Well, you know, you have to, again, he's looking at the combination of infectiousness as well as increased lethality. And that is exactly what the CDC has been working on for many years. They call it their select agent program, gain of function, where they make something more easily transmissible and they make it more deadly. And they've been caught in accident after accident here in the United States, but do not pay any attention to them. Instead, we give them $8 billion to control this outbreak. Isn't that interesting? You know, whenever the government screws up, what do? We give it more power, more money, so they can do it in a bigger way. Let's play the second clip that we have from him with his Channel 4 UK interview, video clip number 5.
I think the most concerning thing about this virus is the combination of infectiousness and the ability to cause severe disease or death. And we have not since 1918.
The Spanish flu,
seen a virus that combined those two qualities in the same way. We have seen very lethal viruses. We have seen certainly Ebola or Nipah or any of the other diseases that CEPI, the organization that I run, works on. But those viruses have high mortality rates. I mean, Ebola's mortality rate in some settings is greater than 80%, but they don't have the infectiousness that this virus has. They don't have the potential to explode and spread globally.
So we have to be more alarmed about measles because it's more easily spread than Ebola, right? See, that's the problem with this line of logic. And as he mentioned, the organization that he works for, what would that organization be? Full disclosure here. Let's reveal the conflicts of interest here. He works for an organization called Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovations, CEPI, C-E-P-I. This is a NGO that is based out of Norway. It launched just in 2017, about the same time that the Wuhan Biosafety Level 4 lab. Not that there's any connection there, but, you know, it doesn't take long for these things to have some results, right? They launched in 2017 at Davos. The organization, this is coming from the New American. They did a great job of background research. The organization describes itself as, quote, an innovative global partnership between public, private, philanthropic, and civil society organizations working to accelerate the development of vaccines against emerging infectious diseases and to enable equitable access to these vaccines for the affected populations during outbreaks. So you got to do this during the outbreak. That means you really got to accelerate it. No time for any of that testing, right? Even as when I talked to Del Bigtree last week, even if they take a year and a half before they put this out, which is not what they're talking about. They're talking about doing this during an outbreak. But even if they were to go for a year and a half, they still wouldn't know what the long-term effects are. And many of these vaccine issues show up in terms of long-term effects. And, of course, Del Bigtree gave us the pulled out the World Health Organization where these doctors are talking back and forth, many of them saying, you know, we're not doing any testing of long-term health, and we're not doing sufficient testing before we put this stuff out. Now they're talking about accelerating it. And that's been the bottom line of their annual wargaming, where they push it through the government officials and the military, at the CDC, at the other health bureaucracies in the United States. They always got to move quickly and more draconian fashion to quarantine and to shut down, and then to accelerate, as they point out here, to accelerate the development of vaccines and to deploy them during the outbreak immediately. The leader of CEPI, C-E-P-I, is the organization's CEO. That's that guy right there, Richard Hackett, that you just saw. Okay, he's a leader. He's a CEO. Does he have a vested interest in pushing the accelerated development of vaccines? Oh, yes, he does. He says, I don't think it's crazy analogy to compare this to World War II. It's a war. And he said the World Health Organization is using those kinds of terms. They have seen what this virus is capable of doing. And so then the UK, Channel 4, kind of calls him on that. They said, what do you say to people who say you're using these martial metaphors, you're making it sound very scary, and you have a vested interest in making people fearful so that you can get the investment in a vaccine? What do you say to that? And we'll talk about what he has to say to that. he just doubles down and talks about that. But they are involved in funding not one, but three different vaccines. They've already been developed, and they are ready to roll them out. So, you know, they don't worry about them profiteering off of this. Just make sure that you panic. When we come back, I'll tell you what you really need to panic about. How this government is going to use this. And we're already seeing examples of this. We're about to have the federal government is talking like it's going to nationalize a rest home. So we're talking about the concentration of everything. Rest homes have always been regulated by state and local officials. They could close them down. But no. We're going to have the federal government come in. Not even the federal government. We'll have the CDC, kind of like the Federal Reserve. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Making sense common again. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Welcome back. When I look at what's going on with Richard Hatchett, he is the leader of CEPI, the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovations. He's also the CEO. This is an organization, an NGO headquartered in Norway that began at Davos in 2017 to accelerate vaccine development during outbreaks. And that's exactly what he's now pushing. And he's pushing the metaphor of war. I'm reminded of Chertoff, who left Homeland Security and went to a company that made body scanners. And then lo and behold, we had the underwear bomber around Christmas time. Remember, we had Kurt Haskell witness it. He said, yeah, I saw this guy. I mean, he looked like a bum. He looked like he didn't know what he was doing, what was going on. And there was a guy with a suit kind of walking him up to the counter. He didn't have a passport or anything. And the guy said, we got this taken care of. Got him on board anyway. And Haskell's looking at this like, this is really strange. Haskell's a lawyer. And so he kept an eye on this guy. See what was, and he turned out to be the underwear bomber, right? They stopped the guy. Very incompetent, but that didn't matter. It didn't matter whether he blew the plane up. As a matter of fact, they didn't really want him to blow the plane up because they wanted everybody to know that he had tried to blow a plane up with a bomb in his underwear because they wanted to push these scanners. And lo and behold, they immediately had these things already manufactured and ready to deliver out of the warehouse. What a surprise. And then, of course, as Kurt Haskell talked about that here at InfoWars many times, it was completely ignored by mainstream media. The underwear bomber called him as a defense witness and just did that as a plea bargaining bargain chip, right? Hey, you give me some favorable terms here, or I'm going to tell everybody exactly what you did by calling Kurt Haskell. He really wanted to testify. But then they did a plea bargain, took that leverage that he had, and that was it. And they didn't call him. So you never got that testimony there. But that's exactly what I see happening here. These Patriot Act traitors out of the Bush administration looking to do another 9/11 in slow motion with some kind of a biological attack, real or imagined. They are going to use this to push another war. The flu war. Now we got the flu war. We've had the Cold War. Now we got the flu war. And these people look after themselves. And they will take away everything that you have. And so we look at this, and we look at this organization, CEPI, we'll just call it, C-E-P-I. As New American reports, they have, in fact, supported at least three avenues of research into such a vaccine. He said, we're only trying to secure resources to make a COVID-19 vaccine. Yeah, they've got three of them. These include, the organization says, support for work being done, conducted by Inovio Pharmaceuticals, a vaccine platform being conducted at the University of Queensland, and support for Moderna Incorporated's vaccine research. Of these, Moderna has developed its vaccine for the novel coronavirus in only 42 days, and it's already shipped it to the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases for a phase one trial, expected to begin soon. Inovio has also developed a vaccine, and they say, we plan to begin human trials in the U.S. in April, and soon thereafter in China and South Korea. We plan on delivering 1 million doses by year end with the existing resources and capacity. So they're not going to wait a year, right? I mean, we're talking about 9 months now. They can probably do that faster. Come on, we can get that like President Trump. We got to have this in 2 months. You guys get this in 2 months? Oh, gee, Mr. President, we can't do that. But, you know, if you really want us to, I think we probably could if we scare people enough. I've been accused here at InfoWars of trying to profiteer off of water filters. They don't do that too much anymore after Flint, Michigan. But, yeah, there's a lot of things that are in your water accidentally and deliberately, and you need to be able to clean that stuff out. And I have no problem telling people about the importance of water filters. I have no problem telling people about the importance of having storable food for a wide variety of issues. And now you see the shelves are emptying out of a number of issues. I was criticized for telling people after a guy goes to the FBI in Alaska and says, you know, I'm hearing voices that are telling me that I need to shoot up places, and I think it's coming from the government. Oh, go away. You're you know, crazy nut conspiracy theorist or whatever. And so then he's allowed to get on a plane carrying a pistol, and he flies from Alaska to Florida, gets off the plane in the luggage claim area, starts shooting people up. So I said, well, you know, at the very least, you could get this body armor insert that you could put into a backpack. They'll let you take a backpack on. They'll let you take a, you know, you can put a body armor insert into that. And you use that as a shield if they won't let you protect yourself. You know, they only let criminals on people who have voices in their heads telling them they need to do a shooting. They're the only ones who are allowed to get on the planes with guns, not you. So, you know, and then I was accused by Daily Beast of trying to profiteer off of a shooting. Is this guy trying to profiteer off of a biological weapon? But let's not at all talk about our biological weapon systems, and let's not talk about the research that's being done in hundreds of places all over the country, universities typically. The UNC Chapel Hill, well, they were doing where they're combining the coronavirus with that specific Chinese bat that they were telling everybody, look, this is the bat. You know, now they're not talking about that anymore. Interesting. They kicked Zero Hedge off of Twitter permanently for talking about that. But, of course, they're not allowed to actually question that or to try to shut down our bioweapons thing. But now this is a war. Now this is a war. We have to do something about it. Hackett and the CEPI can't be accused of stoking fears over the coronavirus as a means to pad their paychecks, writes New American. Well, I'm not so sure about that. They're trying to be a lot more guarded than I am. I will accuse them of that. There are other reasons, conceivably, to push frightening narratives, especially for globalist NGOs that generally prefer centralized command and control governance over decentralized, limited government approaches. Hackett also, listen to this, Hackett, this is a guy who is in charge of, you know, the Homeland Security infrastructure. They're one of the people in the council there under the Bush administration. He loves China. I mean, we heard George W. I wish this was China and I could just tell people what to do. That was George W. Hackett, one of his hatchet men, praised the command and control methods of communist China in confronting the virus during that interview with Channel 4 in the UK. But then at the same time, he criticized the U.S. because we don't have centralized command and control. The decentralization, the supposed quote-unquote injustices and inequities of the U.S. healthcare system. See, they want to take over the U.S. healthcare system, don't they? And we have both Bernie and Elizabeth Warren saying, well, you know, for this particular instance, we've got to nationalize healthcare. We've got to provide healthcare for free to anybody who has been diagnosed with the coronavirus. That's something that the federal government should provide, establishing a precedent, establishing the idea in your mind that if it's important and if it's healthcare, it's got to be done by the federal government because they do it so well, except it's not working out that way in the UK. And in other places where the government is running healthcare, guess what? They're rationing it. They're rationing it. He says, I'm very concerned about the situation in the U.S., says George W. Bush is one of his patriot people, right? Homeland Security people. The U.S. is a big country. It's decentralized. It doesn't have a unified national health system. That's a problem for these globalists. It doesn't have a unified national public health system. CDC is a marvelous institution. But a lot of the actual management of public health problems is delegated down to states and local communities. See, CDC can manage everything all over the world from a centralized location. But those local state governments and the community governments, they can't handle that. This is the idea that, you know, is the central premise of communism. Centralize all power in every detail. And we have seen how the Chinese communists under Mao starved the population without any kind of shortage. No disease either. They just starved them because of central planning. Welcome back. I said at the top of the program that trading had been stopped overnight because it already hit the limits. And so they said what had happened was for the first time since the financial crisis, the entire S&P future market has hit the limit down band of minus 5%, something that it failed to do even during the May 2010 flash crash. That means that no more trades were allowed below the limit down level until the market opened at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time. It opened at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time, and then it really went down. Complete pandemonium is what is reported. And they have halted trading until 9:49 Eastern Time, which is about a minute from now. The S&P 500 cratered 7%. That's 1,800 points, or almost 1,900 points, 1,888 points. 7.3% down, and they stopped trading, just halted it. And now it's going to resume in about 30 seconds. We will see what happens. Investors are waking up shell-shocked report many. And I said oil was down. I said 30% or no, I think it was $30 a barrel. I couldn't remember. Oh, actually, both of those are true. It's now down at $30 a barrel. It's down 30% as well. So I was right on both of those. But the S&P is now down more than 17% from its all-time highs just 2 weeks ago. And it was just shy of a bear market before it opened this morning at 9:30. And then they've had to suspend trading. And it's going to be resuming right about now. So we will keep an eye as to what is going to be happening with the coronomics, I guess is what we ought to call this, right? Coronomics. Did we coin a term here? I don't know. But the economic effects have already hit. And it is really ramping up very quickly. As we're looking at what the political effects and the freedom effects are going to be, and quite frankly, folks, this is not a secondary concern. This has always been my primary concern. You can look at this, and it's kind of interesting to hear people say, well, you know, whatever happens, don't worry about your vaccine stuff. Don't worry about the health effects. We got to stop this thing somehow. That never was the mindset of the patriots who founded this country. I talked last week on Thursday. I talked about the anniversary of the Boston Massacre. On Friday, we had the anniversary of the Alamo. Nobody in this country, it's un-American to put your life before liberty, concerns about life. And I think that applies in this case as well. Yeah, we should be concerned about that. Nobody should be cavalier. And nobody was cavalier about that. They took it very seriously at the Alamo. They weren't like, oh, well, I die. No, no, they took that very seriously. These are real people with real lives, as I pointed out. You had Travis, who had two kids, 29 years old. You had Colonel Dickinson, his wife and kids were there. Saw him murdered. Because that's what they did after they overran the place. They took anybody who was still alive and just executed him on the spot as an example. But that's a very real reminder that today we don't really care. We will throw our heritage of freedom, our birthright as Americans. We'll trade that away for a bowl of porridge, won't we? How'd that work out for Esau? when we look at this and we take this kind of stuff very casually, I'm concerned about that because, look, the economic effects are already hitting us. And I think we're about to get hit with some very dangerous precedents that eventually, whatever happens with this, let's say worst case scenario, this is real and lots of people die. Eventually, it's going to get under control. These things always do, eventually, no matter how many people die. I mean, the Spanish flu was, more people died with the Spanish flu than died in World War I, in the fighting of World War I. But eventually it stopped. And eventually this will stop one way or the other. And then what we're going to be left with is a much more authoritarian regime that won't quite frankly be worth living under if we let it get away from us. And that's exactly what Richard Hackett, is pushing. He says, I'm very concerned about the situation in the United States. We don't have enough central control of health care like they do in China. Yeah, look at China. China's done really good, he said. He praised them. And so the problem in America is we've got too much freedom. Got to get rid of that freedom. This is a George W. Bush appointee. I'm very concerned about the situation in the United States. The U.S. is a big country. It's decentralized. Yes, by design. It doesn't have a unified national health system. By design, Hackett. It doesn't have a unified national public health system. CDC is a marvelous institution. Oh, yes, we've been singing its praises here on this program for a long time, haven't we? But a lot of the actual management of public health problems is delegated down to states and to local communities. And I am concerned that the embedded injustices and inequities in the American system will play out, that the virus will hit vulnerable Americans. It'll hit Americans who don't have access to health care. It will hit Americans who don't have access to health insurance. It will hit Americans who actually depend on the school system to provide meals for their children. In a terrible way. War, however, we should be reminded, is the health of the state. An aphorism that has always been proven true time and again. And when we look at how this is playing out for these people, Bernie wants Medicare for all. So does Elizabeth Warren. And they're pushing it in the wake of the coronavirus. And this guy, Richard Hackett, this globalist who's now head of this organization to accelerate vaccine development, put it out there while the outbreak is still going, right? That started at Davos 2 years ago, 3 years ago. And he's saying, you know, you Americans, you got a free healthcare system. You don't have centralized control like that. We got to make you like China. They, every time we look at this, what's the solution? You got to become more like China. They've done a stellar job of this, haven't they? Haven't they? Well, the UK and Italy have nationalized their systems, and they're already overloaded, and they're already rationing healthcare. When you look at Italy, the virus is hitting the area of Lombardy especially hard. They're imposing a quarantine on the entire region of 16 million people. Their universal health care system is reportedly already overloaded and collapsing. Let me tell you something. Back in the late 1970s, when I was still dating Karen, my wife, she had some relatives from Italy, because part of her family is from Italy, just a couple of generations ago. They came to visit, these Italian relatives, and they had their grandmother fell and broke her leg because they had a nationalized healthcare system like Bloomberg's talking about, right? You know, Bloomberg said, you know, we got to be able to address these issues frankly. And nobody really wants to talk about this, you know, just like Bernie and Biden say, yeah, you know, we got overpopulation. That's a problem. We've just got to step up taxpayer funding for abortions and kill more kids. Well, Bloomberg says on the other end of life, you know, you got an old man, he's got prostate cancer. We just say, sorry, we can't do anything for you. And that's what they did to this grandmother of my wife's cousins. And she broke her leg and they just didn't give her any health. And she died from a broken leg, complications from a broken leg under that system in the late 1970s. So you can imagine what this is looking like now, right? And they've got a very old population in Italy. That may be one of the reasons why it is so severe there. 23% of the Italian population is over 65, making it the oldest in the world after Japan. The elderly with previous pathologies are notoriously numerous here. I think this could explain why we're seeing more serious cases of coronavirus, which I repeat, in the vast majority of cases, starts mildly and causes few problems, especially in young people and certainly in children. Better watch out in the Vatican, especially. Folks, look, the point is you want to make sure that you are prepared, that you're prepared to withstand the kinds of measures that the government is going to impose. You don't want to leave yourself at the mercy of a merciless system, the government. And so I've been saying from the very beginning, you always want to make sure that you've got storable food. We still have storable food available. Our producer has upped their production. Of course, this is made in America. It's non-GMO. It's from My Patriot Supply. It's our private label that we have, and they have added three times the production that they had before. We've gotten it down now back. It went up to 9 weeks at one point in time. The weight is now back down to 8 weeks. You also need to make sure that you have supplies that are going to help to maintain your health, to keep you in as good a health as possible. So we've got a lot of supplements, vitamin, mineral fusion, drink mix, many other products, depending on what your particular health needs are. Address those. Make sure that you have adequate supplies of those on hand. And again, InfoWarsStore.com, we've got a lot of products there that are going to help you to weather this storm, because the worst thing that could happen would be that you would be in a government quarantine. Self-quarantine is not going to be nearly as bad as government quarantine. Clean water as well.
Using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Welcome back. They stopped trading on the stock exchange overnight. The futures had already hit the limits. Once they drop a certain amount, they stop it because they're afraid that it's going to generate a feedback loop with programmed trading that will completely eviscerate the market. But even as they did that, when it opened, it dropped even further, nearly 1,900 points down and a little over 7% before they stopped trading. They started it again about 10 minutes ago. It's now come up somewhat. but it's still down 1,400 points, about 5% on the market. So the coronavirus is going to be very deadly for our economy, the global economy. As we've been saying for a while, Gerald Celente, every time I have him on, he talks about how overextended, what a bubble economy this is. And everybody's just wondering what kind of a pin it was going to be that was going to bust it. Well, it turns out it's a hypodermic needle. And so it looks like this is the beginning of the collapse of the bubble globally. But we will wait and see. Hopefully that's not going to be the case. But it's also going to be deadly to your liberty. That's what I'm concerned about. As we look at the move to try to capitalize on this by people like Richard Hackett, who was part of the George W. Bush homeland team, the traitors who pushed through the Patriot Act on the on a false narrative, where a lot of people died. But they used this. They lied about what had happened. Do you feel that by enacting the Patriot Act and destroying and eviscerating the Bill of Rights, did that solve the terrorism problem? You know, we got the war on terror. Now we're going to have a flu war. It is a war, he says. This is going to be like World War II, or maybe like World War I, or whatever. This guy is pushing the metaphor of war, and he's also pushing accelerated vaccine development, which, by the way, you know, they've got the inside track on all these different developments as well, just like Chertoff and the body scanners. But as we see Bernie and Elizabeth Warren pushing the idea that we've got to have special federal health care now for this flu, using this as an opportunity, this guy is saying the same thing. Yeah, we need to have, we need to address the inequities of our horrible private system that is decentralized. We can't have that. We got to be more like the Chinese communists, he said. That should tell you everything about where this guy is coming from and what his motivations are. He's trying to run this for monetary profit and for political and gain as one of these insiders to try to reorganize our society. So we look at Italy. How is that working for them? Well, they're already having to ration beds. We look at the UK. They're already admitting that they need to ration health care as well. Latest figures show that the National Health System, the NHS in the UK, their intensive care units are running at around 80% capacity at the start of March. Overall, the NHS in the UK has the lowest ratios of hospital beds per head of population in Europe. UK hospitals are already discussing how they'll need to ration care to those most likely to survive in the event there's not enough beds. Well, you just ask Bloomberg. What do? You throw the old people out on the street. That was what he was saying. So, yeah, do you want to make sure that you are at the mercy of this merciless organization? Centralized government-run health care? I don't think so. Reason Magazine, coronavirus will be deadly to your liberty. Nothing makes government grow like a crisis. People get scared. Politicians respond to that fear. Many times they generate that. They stoke it, which is what Richard Hackett is doing. With fear, they respond to that fear with promises that the state will step in and make everything all better. Just like having your mom kiss the scrape on your knee, right? Government ends up larger and more powerful in the pandemic of COVID-19. Is going to do exactly the same thing. It is the healthiest thing to happen to government power in a long time. As it leaves government with a rosy glow, however, our freedom will end up more haggard than ever, writes Reason Magazine. More on that and more on how they're going to expand the surveillance state in the wake of this. When we come back, we'll keep an eye on the economy. Stay with us.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. And, you know, when we look back at September 11th, from the very beginning, quite frankly, it took me a very long time to even see footage of the buildings collapsing and their own footprint. It took me a while to realize after I saw that, that Building 7 had collapsed in its own footprint, a steel skyscraper, without even being hit by a plane. And, of course, you know, we've had skyscrapers had been hit by planes in the past. You had the Empire State Building had been hit by a plane. That affected building codes. Did anything change after 9/11? Did they change building codes? Did anybody raise an alarm about how the New York City building codes weren't stringent enough or how somebody violated the building codes? No. President Trump was right on day one. He said, that's the strongest building I've ever seen. It even took a bomb to the foundation back in the 90s. Something else is going on with that, said President Trump at the time. He knows. He just hasn't done anything about it, unfortunately. But we're now getting ready to see another 9/11 roll out in slow motion, I believe, with this coronavirus. Look at the way that this is being hyped by the media and by the government at every level. And look at the pressure that Trump is facing to do something, to be seen to do something, because we all have adopted the idea that any kind of crisis must be addressed by the federal government, by the president particularly. It's his fault, right? It's even more his fault, they're saying, than it is the Chinese. As a matter of fact, you look at Richard Hackett, and he says, we need a system like the Chinese. Yeah, it's not the Chinese fault that this happened. Doesn't have anything to do with their biosafety level 4 lab that they stole the information from. You know, maybe it's got out of their lab because they were selling animals, because they were working on, according to the LinkedIn profile of that chief scientist there, they're working on the coronavirus, combining it with bats. Same type of thing we've done here in the United States. We could have sent it over there. They could have let it escape out of the lab. They could have had people sell lab animals into that marketplace. All of these things are possibilities. But they didn't contain it either in that centralized control society. But now we've got a guy who used to work for Homeland Security in the Bush administration saying, we need to be like China. They did a great job of this stuff. We need to be more like them. They have centralized control. They have government health care. Just think about that for a moment. This is the guy who is rushing vaccines out for you, talking about how we need to be more like the Chinese. Did you see anything in all the reports that we've seen out of China that makes you want to adopt any of their systems, whether it's the hospitals or their police or anything else? No. They were also running ads primarily for people, job ads, people who speak English. Evidently, maybe when they stole the documents, they weren't able to read them accurately enough. Maybe that's another issue. Maybe it wasn't sold out or leaked out or deliberately released. Maybe they just couldn't read the directions of what they had stolen from the American and Canadian labs. So where is this going to go? You got a Republican out of Florida, Ted Yoho. Yoho. Maybe it's part of the Pirate Party. I don't know. You can look at it as socialized medicine, he said, but in the face of an outbreak or a pandemic, what's your options? These are Republicans talking like this. Richard Hatchett. You know, Hackett or whatever. He's a hatchet job. Anyway, telling us that. Now we got a Republican congressman. Yeah, it is socialized medicine that we're talking about, but this is a pandemic, and so we got to adopt it. It's an emergency procedure. And as reason points out, he's not the only Republican to find a new place in his heart for government control of health care. Many in the Trump administration are also on board. What else can you do in the face of an outbreak, a pandemic? They say, well, think about this. So far we've had 94,000 cases, 3,200 deaths worldwide. It's now higher than that. It's a little bit over 100,000 cases and so forth. You could, I suppose, rely on the same not yet entirely government-dominated health system that deals with flu outbreaks every year. Now, if you're going to believe these statistics, maybe you should believe the CDC, which tells us that we had 32 million Americans infected with the flu that sent 310,000 to the hospital, killed 18,000 last year. How does that compare with this? But they're using the fear of this to drive many different aspects that are going to destroy our freedom. Fear is the key here to Congressman Yoho's sudden love for socialized medicine. As Economic historian Robert Higgs, the guy who wrote Crisis and Leviathan, 1987, said, "All animals experience fear. Human beings, perhaps most of all. The people who have the effrontery to rule us, who call themselves our government, understand this basic fact of human nature. They exploit it. They cultivate it. Whether they compose a warfare state or a welfare state, they depend on it to secure popular submission, compliance with official dictates, and on some occasions, affirmative cooperation with the state's enterprises and adventures." I'll quote somebody that I don't have much respect for, FDR, when he said, "What we have to fear is fear itself." That never applied more than now, especially as these people are talking about war. These are the same people who are feeding this narrative of herd immunity, which, by the way, that was something that was put forth in the 1930s when they were looking at immunity from people who had actually gotten the disease and survived. They had lifetime immunity. You don't get lifetime immunity with any of these vaccines. You may get some other things as well, but you don't get lifetime immunity. That's why they keep doing it 2-3 times. And so if you don't have lifetime immunity, there's absolutely no way that you're going to have herd immunity. But these people don't have herd immunity. They have a herd mentality. And the government and the media right now, especially the Democrats, are trying to stampede that herd. And you better watch out if you're in the way. That's what I said from the very beginning. I want to get out of the way of these people. Like Rahm Emanuel said, we always talk about this, never let a serious crisis go to waste. And then the other part of what he had to say, and by what I mean by that, is an opportunity to do things that you think you could not do before. And that's exactly what they're doing right now. So as we look at this, we're now turning to our plunge protection teams to save us in the market as it plunged this morning so quickly that they had to stop trading both before it opened and then immediately after it opened. So now we got the Federal Reserve. It's now become the default doctor for whatever ails the U.S. economy. We got our plunge protection team that's going to come in there and buy up stocks and so forth. We got Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders pushing for a form of nationalized, socialized medicine because of the coronavirus. It's going to eventually pass, but we're going to be left with a permanently bigger government because of the ratcheting. And we're going to lose our freedom in other ways as well that Reason Magazine is not aware of. And I'm going to talk about that when we come back, geospatial intelligence and how that is metastasizing faster than the coronavirus or any other flu or cold. But we also have Bill Gates, of course. It's not just the organization being run by Richard Hackett. It's also Bill Gates and his foundation. They're going to have home testing kits to allow people who fear that they may be infected to swab their noses and send the samples back for an analysis. Do you think that Bill Gates and his people might be able to look for coronavirus and at the same time put you in a DNA database for the government? Don't you think? Am I being paranoid about that? You better be paranoid about Bill Gates. The results should be available in 1 or 2 days, and as the Seattle Times points out, they will be shared with local health officials who will then put it in their database. Now, if they're going to share who's put that in their database, if they're going to then look at the infected people, ask them questions about their movements, about their contacts, make it easier for health officials to locate others who might need to be tested or quarantined. Well, they've actually got an app for that already. We talked about that last week. And they're preparing your mind for it to be rolled out. Yeah, it's a mind game right here now at this point. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. As we look at the economic chaos in the stock market, never let a crisis go to waste, right? You can get an example of this out of Virginia, where the Democrats there have voted to raise the gas tax by at least 10 cents a gallon. In some areas, it's going to go from 16 cents to 34 cents. Look, folks, that we can talk about, 10 cents a gallon. That's like when they raise the sales tax and say, we're only going to go up a penny. They always raise it a penny. If it's 6%, they raise it a penny. That is a 1/6 increase. That is 16.7% increase. If they go from 16 cents to 34 cents, that is a 112% increase in the state of Virginia. Because, you know, the Democrats always wanted to raise the taxes, and now they've got an opportunity. As soon as oil goes down, and again, oil has cratered today, 30% down to around $30 per barrel. And stock market is going down. But, you know, when you look at the price of oil dropping, that's when these people, Republicans as well as Democrats, they'll always ratchet up the state tax when the price of oil goes down so that you don't see that price of oil go down. look, the price of oil dropped. Let's stick in our tax there. They'll never know the difference. It's typically why you don't see that reflected at the pumps, because you've got politicians increasing the cost with their taxes in the back door. And then this cynical statement by Democrat lawmakers. They said the increases would help reduce traffic on busy roadways in the state. This is an historic agreement that will give Virginians more time with their families and less time stuck in traffic. Well, how are they going to do that? Are they going to use these taxes to build roads? Because I haven't seen any example of that. In most jurisdictions, they've stopped building roads. They only build toll roads because they're getting you conditioned to the idea that you're going to pay by the mile. That's the only way that they're going to be able to fund or to get this money out of people traveling. They've gotten used to having gasoline taxes, but they're raising the taxes to make it more expensive to have internal combustion engines. So people switch over to electric vehicles, and then that means that they're going to have to track our every movement. Why? Because they're going to have to tax us by the mile. That's the only way that they can tax the electric vehicles. They can't tax it when you charge it up. You could charge it up anywhere, and they don't know if that money that they can't tax the electricity coming out of the outlet, because they don't know what that's being used for. Is that being used for a car or for something else? And so they have to track your car by the mile. That's one of the reasons why they love electric cars. Think about that. We got a lot of different alternatives. If you don't want to use oil, if you're afraid of oil, if they've gotten you afraid of carbon, whatever that is. And again, Chris Matthews didn't know the difference between carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide. But if you're afraid of carbon and you want to get rid of all oil and gas and products and so forth, then there's a lot of other alternatives besides battery-operated cars. You could have hydrogen cars. I mean, they are a form of electric car. They don't have a battery. You fill up the hydrogen. You could tax the hydrogen when you put it in. And their exhaust is water vapor. But they're not pushing for that, are they? They're subsidizing and demanding that you go with electric vehicles. The only company that's doing anything with hydrogen is Toyota, but there's no talk about building an infrastructure for that. That'd be a lot easier than building an infrastructure with electric charging stations. But I don't know, you know, when they say this is going to give people more time with their families, does that mean they're going to use it to build the roads? I don't know. I mean, we've seen this fraud over and over again. Just look at what I reported last week in California. Every time they pass a state lottery, they say, well, the money is going to be used to help to pay for more education and more schools, except it doesn't in many cases. And in California, they're missing millions of dollars. Lottery revenue's gone up, but they're giving the same or less money to the schools. And they're saying, wait a minute, something here doesn't add up. Well, if you were any good at math, you wouldn't be playing the lottery in the first place. But that's the kind of fraud that they always have. And so the other aspect of this is that I think they're really looking to make this unaffordable for people to travel. That's how you're going to spend more time with your family. We're going to make sure you can't drive. We're going to lock you down. Yeah. And of course, somehow you'll find a way to get to work. We just know that you will. So, as we look at this, stocks are still plunging. They have now recovered somewhat. from the loss down to 1,900 points. I think it's now down. When they opened it up, it came back up 1,500 points down. It's now at this point in time about 1,500 points. It had gotten back up to where it was only 1,400 points. And now it is fluctuating between 1,400 and 1,500 as we speak. But I want you to think about how this is going to, you know, we talk about the transportation issue, and a big issue with that is tracking your movements. Like I said, they want to have a premise where they have to track your movements. You got a battery operated, you know, electric car that has batteries. They've got to track your movements so they can tax you. So everybody's got to be tracked everywhere they go, right? And they've been working on this for a very long time. As I've said, all along, starting back in the late 1990s, geospatial intelligence began to be the fastest growing part of national security and the whole surveillance state, and it has remained that. But nobody really talks about that. Have you heard anybody else talk about geospatial intelligence? No. No. James Clapper, that's where he hung out all the time. James Clapper has addressed the annual convention for geospatial intelligence, and they have annual conventions where they have 4,000 to 5,000 professionals show up every year. And he's been keynote speaker several times there. But of course, you know, when Ron Wyden asked him, are you tracking Americans illegally in violation of the FISA Act?
No, not intentionally, Senator.
No, intentionally. Intentionally. He was intentionally committing perjury, intentionally violating the FISA Act, intentionally violating the Constitution. And so the question that the Federalist asks, should government be able to track your every move outside your house for the rest of your life? That's really what we're talking about here. You know, you got people formerly of Homeland Security, like Richard Hackett, and he says, well, we need to be more like China. This is horrible that we can't track people, that we don't have centralized command and control, that we don't have centralized health care. Look at how well that's worked out for China. Well, it only takes one picture for Clearview Artificial Intelligence, AI, to start its search. All you have to do is take a picture of a face, upload it, and the facial recognition app takes it from there. It scans as many as 3 billion pictures on the web for matching images, and in seconds, it provides the resulting picture along with links to where they were found. Now, this story came out several weeks ago, and then Clearview itself got hacked. But I just want you to think about, well, when we come back, we're about out of time. We've got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about how this is exactly the business model that was created for social media. And we're going to talk about how the coronavirus panic is going to fuel this. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Liberty. It's your move. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. You know, a few weeks ago, we had the news about Clearview AI, how this was an app, a private app. You know, the government, hey, the government didn't do this. The government didn't develop this app. The government's not, they're just buying the services, right? It's a public-private partnership. This is just the blessings of free enterprise out there. And I'm telling you, this is exactly what has happened with social media. Here's a company, they go out and they make an app, says, hey, just send us a picture, take a picture of somebody. And in this particular example, they have a particular a picture of a shoplifter because they had a surveillance camera there, but they didn't know who it was. And so they take this picture of the shoplifter. They send it to Clearview. Clearview scans several billion images that they have scraped off of public data. You know, when you put your stuff up on Facebook or Twitter or your friends put you up or whatever. And identified the woman and sent back her name and address and so forth to law enforcement, who were then able to arrest her because they had video of her shoplifting. Well, that's good, you say. And it is good. We need to arrest criminals. But it's even more important that we have due process, because if you don't have due process and protections for innocent people, then the government itself can become criminals. The government itself can become terrorists. So don't give up your Bill of Rights in order to get terrorists and criminals. That's why we have these systems here. And I'm telling you that setting up private companies and buying their apps and then using them for law enforcement, that model is exactly the model that was used to establish social media. You know, hey, we got this internet out there, and, you know, it was an idea of a DARPA psychologist, but hey, it was developed with private companies out there, and they're pulling this together. And we've got the capability of looking at everything that everybody is saying and doing a profile on these people. And then we can use this to identify speech that we don't like, and we can shut that down after we establish a public square and get all these people into the public square. Then we can selectively weed these individuals out, and they'll forget that they could ever go to the individual websites to get that information. Right? You heard the caller talking to Alex about how, you know, he was listening to InfoWars. I thought they were gone. No, no, no. They have a website. They always had a website, right? But you forgot about that website, InfoWars, when you could find everybody on Twitter and on Facebook and so forth. As a matter of fact, Facebook came to Alex. He was like the third person that they did the live streaming thing to. They used him to build their platform, to build the idea that the only place you could find this stuff was on social media. And then they kick him off of social media, hope that you don't remember that he came from InfoWars or that we have our own platform, band.video. But anyway, it's not just serendipity that the government can do all this stuff without a search warrant, saying, well, that's public information. Yeah, you put it out there, and they can scrape it off of that. But let me tell you where this is headed. Here's an example of this. And you say, well, okay, well, that's good. They got a shoplifter. And I don't really care if they violate everybody. You know, what are you worried about, says Eric Schmidt? You know, what are you doing that you're ashamed of? Well, it doesn't always work that way. We had the example that landed on Friday. NBC News put this out. Google tracked his bike ride past a burglarized home, and that made him the prime suspect. He's just riding his bike. I was using an app to see how many miles I rode my bike. Now it's put me at the scene of the crime. I would just update this and call it Richard Jewell taking a bike ride. Oh, of course, you weren't supposed to see Richard Jewell either. They were successful at getting people to not go see that movie from Clint Eastwood because it was the perfect metaphor for what our government is doing right now. You need to see that movie. And you need to take anybody that doesn't understand what the danger is of this to see that movie. So he gets an email from Google's legal investigation support team. They write to let him know the local police had demanded information relating to his Google account. And the company said, Google said, we're going to turn that information over unless you go to court and try to block it, and you've got 7 days to do that. He's like, well, wait a minute. What's going on? He's totally confused. He doesn't know what's going on. Here's the takeaway, too, folks, that NBC doesn't tell you. Well, they'd already released, Google had already turned over his information to the government. I don't know what's different about this information. I mean, again, you know, they're playing games. You know, they turn over the information to let the people know that he was there. But now they want to get everything about him. They want to do a complete audit of his life. And so for that, Google says, well, I don't know if we'll go that far. We'll do it if you don't stop them in 7 days, but we'll give you a little bit of advance notice before they do a complete audit of your life. We flagged you as a suspect to them, and now they want to do a complete audit of your life, says Google. He says, I was hit with a really deep fear. He's 30 years old. He said even though he couldn't think of anything that he had done wrong, he had an Android phone that was linked to his Google account. He also had an app called RunKeeper. And he would use it to record his rides, his exercise. The app relied on the phone's location services, and it fed his movements to Google. And then they fed it to the cops. Said, here's a guy, here's your suspect, this is a guy, right here. And it said, all right, we'd like all of the information that you have. Well, we got to ask him first. We'll give him 7 days to try to block this in court. Isn't that nice of them? Google is very concerned about your privacy. They don't want to be evil. They'll just flag you as, they'll flag you as being evil, right? So he looked up his route on the day in question, And he saw that he had passed the victim's house three times within an hour. By the way, he didn't know what he was being charged with, right? He says, I didn't know what any of this was about. I knew the police wanted to get something from me. I was afraid I was going to get charged with something, but I didn't know what. He had only one clue. And in the notice from Google was a case number. So he got online, he looked up that case number, and he found that it was a report on the burglary of an elderly woman's home 10 months earlier. It occurred less than a mile from his home. And so then he starts panicking. He says, I don't know. I'm the number one suspect in a burglary. How did that happen? And so he started investigating it. He went to his parents' home, and he needed some help to defend himself. So they got some money together. They hired a lawyer. And that's when the lawyer found that this had all been prompted by a geofence warrant. So in other words, he'd crossed over into an area. They said, well, you know, here's a geofence, and we want to know anybody who is in that area on a particular day. Bingo, they got him. Why? Because Google is channeling all that information to them already. Already. He becomes suspect number one. Then that brings us to this app that just was went public last week. Babel Streets Locate X. Again, it's a geofence. They can select an area. And then anybody who crosses into that area, they can go back and look at your history for many weeks or months earlier. Everywhere that you've gone. And of course, since they can do that to you, they can cross-tabulate that to everybody else. And bingo, you have the perfect tool to start going out and arresting people and putting them into FEMA camp concentration quarantines, right? That's exactly why I think they came out with this app. You saw this publicized, protocol.com, put it out, the Drudge Report picked it up, and now you got a lot of people talking about how it's going to grab everybody's location data in a geographic area. They're not going to have to do what, you know, Bill Gates is like, well, you take a swab in your nose and you send that to us and we'll analyze it, see if we got coronavirus. If we do, we'll report that to the government. They'll come out and interview you and try to figure out with you everybody that you've been in contact with so we can grab them too. Well, they don't have to do that anymore, right? They can look at everybody that's been there. If you've been to some area that they've identified as a hotspot, you've been to Italy, you've been to China, something like that, and you go into a geofenced area, bingo. They're going to take a look at you and audit everything that you've got. This is where we're headed with this kind of panic. And they've been working on this for decades. Now they're ready to roll it out, and they've got an excuse. Welcome back. Let's talk about the politics. We had an article at InfoWars.com. Blue check marks on Twitter celebrate stock market crash and blame President Trump for it. Yeah, it's his fault, right? The whole coronavirus thing is President Trump's fault. This is why I said from the very beginning, when we look back at the way the Obama administration handled what we were told by the World Health Organization were worldwide pandemics. What were they? Let's review. SARS, MERS, swine flu, the H1N1, Ebola, all of those were worldwide pandemics. And several of those happened under the Obama administration. And yet, when you had Joe Biden talking about the swine flu, I don't know, I wouldn't get on an airplane. You know, that's get locked up with all those people and so forth, you know, because, I mean, who wants to fly public transportation anyway, you know, when you got a private jet? But when he said that, he was quickly called to the carpet, and within 2 hours, he was walking that back. I didn't mean to panic anybody. I don't want to get anybody alarmed. And yet, what do we have? We've got the constant alarm of this. Even before we've seen any real effects here, any real effects, we've already hit a crisis situation with the stock market. Look at last week. Look at today. Today, unprecedented, maybe one of the biggest lost days ever. Certainly as it was building up because of the panic over the weekend being pushed by the Democrat Party and the Democrat media. It's all political. And so you have these people, the article at InfoWars.com, blue check marks on Twitter celebrating the stock market crash, blaming President Trump. One person says, market crash is trending. Ted Cruz may have coronavirus. Trump isn't tweeting anything, must be hiding under his desk. Trump is going to prison. See, that's the way this is going. It is very political. Now, you talk about the political aspect of this, and you talk about how these people are using it. They say, well, you're not telling people that it's a real crisis and so forth. That's irresponsible. Well, real or not, this is how they're using it. Just to give you an example of the hypocrisy and the double standard yet again, we have Jackie Speier, Democrat from California, complaining yesterday on MSNBC that President Trump is putting his supporters at risk by not canceling his political rallies. That's irresponsible, right? It's his fault if anybody gets sick. She said the fact that he is not willing to cancel his various rallies suggests that he is willing to place even his most ardent supporters at risk because we're supposed to stay 6 feet away from other persons in order to mitigate the exchange of those viruses. And I think that he's showing, unfortunately, why he is so ill-prepared to guide our country during this time of crisis. Then, consider the fact that we had Bernie Sanders over the weekend drawing a crowd of 15,000 in Chicago. Was there any criticism of Bernie Sanders? No, celebration of the fact that Bernie Sanders can get 15,000 people. But if President Trump does, then he's putting his supporters at risk. So you can't catch the coronavirus at a Democrat rally. You can only catch it at a Republican rally, is what the press is telling us. And the Democrat congresswoman. As a matter of fact, we got a clip of her complaining about that. Let's play Jackie Speier saying that it's all President Trump's fault. He's got to shut down all these rallies, unlike Bernie Sanders. Here's Jackie Speier.
I don't think the president is capable of telling us the truth about the coronavirus, and I regret saying that. I think we have to rely on the scientists who are attempting to tell the truth even when they have to contradict the president. The fact that he is not willing to cancel his various rallies suggests that he is willing to place even his most ardent supporters at risk because we're supposed to stay 6 feet away from other persons in order to mitigate the exchange of those viruses. I think that he is showing, unfortunately, why he is so ill-prepared to guide our country during this time of crisis.
Just understand that it's not a problem. Globalism is not a problem. You know, if you talk about globalism, you are racist, right? Because that's code word for being anti-Semitic, if you talk about globalism. But because we put all of our industry worldwide, that we made China the hub, and whether or not you get the finished goods, you still get the raw materials for the most part from China. That's what we're seeing with pharmaceuticals. They make so much of our medicines, but even if we make the medicine here, we get the raw materials from China. Same thing with automobile parts. You already had, before anybody got sick in South Korea, you had Hyundai shutting down the largest complex there, the combined Hyundai-Kia factory. They had to shut it down because they couldn't not completely shut it down. They had to slow it down to a near shutdown because they couldn't get sufficient auto parts. And then when you had one worker get sick, they shut the whole thing down. Quite frankly, this is being used heavily for politics, and the economics are just one segment of that. When they go in and say, Bernie Sanders, that's great. Look at how popular he is. He's got 15,000 people in Chicago, but President Trump, you are endangering your supporters if you hold a rally. Of course, when Sanders is there, he's not really too worried about health. he's talking about the fact that he's going to make sure that if he puts in any Supreme Court justices, he's going to make sure that they are 100% pro-abortion, and he will never appoint a judge who is not 100% pro-Roe v. Wade. It's the Democrats who are challenging in the Supreme Court a law in Louisiana that was set up to protect women's health. It was put in by a Democrat woman, supported by a feminist atheist. I played that for you last week. Said, aren't we concerned about women's health? See, they bought the That's a funny thing. These Democrats and this feminist atheist, she actually believed them when they thought, when they said that the Planned Parenthood clinics were about women's health. No, it's about killing kids. They don't care about women's health. They'll let the women die if they can kill more kids. And that's basically what Bernie said. So these are the people who are going to run your health care. These are the people who are going to do triage and decide, like Bloomberg said, well, that person's pretty old. We don't need to waste any money on them. Let's just let them expire. Keep that in mind as these people start pushing centralized control of health care. Even the Republicans, Congressman Yoho, you know who you are, yoo-hoo, out of Florida. And he really does sound like he's speaking pirate. I don't know, Yoho. This pirate of the Caribbean who decides that he's going to take your money and centralize health care because, you know, coronavirus, we got to do something about it. You know, hey, look, I'm all for freedom, but, you know, if things get dangerous, we got to have the federal government come in here and get really authoritarian with your butt. And so that's really what's got to happen now. You know, we got a problem. All right, it's got to be solved by the federal government. That's what the Republicans are saying, in essence. And again, that's what you have to be really afraid of. That's going to linger permanently. No matter what this virus is, that is going to linger permanently. You got Politico, as Breitbart is pointing out, continues the media's quest to blame President Trump for this coronavirus. And President Trump is damned if he does and damned if he doesn't. You know, no matter what he does, they're going to use this to criticize him. All of this is going to be blamed on President Trump. The economic collapse is going to be blamed on President Trump. This is their tool to roll back Trump because he is the most visible head of the anti-globalist forces. I mean, he's taken on China after decades of them destroying our industry, being used by the globalists to destroy our industry. That's why I don't think that this is simply limited to the Democrats. I think all the globalists are in on this, even to the extent, as MSN over the weekend pointed out, that inside the Trump administration, there was a debate raging over what to tell the public. So there's a conspiracy of silence here. It never happened under Obama. You know, Obama never tried to tamp down concerns about Ebola. Didn't happen, did it? Oh, yeah, it did. Oh, yeah, it did. He never tried to tamp down concerns on the H1N1 swine flu. Both of those were worldwide pandemics declared by the World Health Organization, and both of those, the Obama administration said, not a problem, not a problem at all. So, folks, you're on your own. You do not want to be reliant on the federal government. You understand, if you're listening to this program, that they are not going to provide you with health care. If they do something in terms of quarantining you, they'll probably it'll be counterproductive, just like we saw with these mini cruise ships. So you want to make sure that you have taken adequate preparation, prepare for you and your family to make sure that you have the health supplements to make yourself as healthy as possible. Prepare for an economic shutdown. That means having storable food, as a precaution against not having any food. I mean, when we come back, we're going to talk about what's going on with toilet paper. That can happen to anything and everything. So you want to make sure that you have food covered. You want to make sure that you have fresh water, clean water, the water filters that we have at InfoWarsStore.com, and the storable food that you'll find at InfoWarsStore.com. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back as we look at the economic chaos in the stock market this weekend, as you have investors sitting around watching news reports all weekend, and by Monday morning they were panicked. Before the market even opened, they had to, they'd hit the stops where they ceased trading because futures had already dropped the market so much. When it did open up, it went down nearly 1,900 points, a little bit over 7%. They suspended trading again for a cooling off period. And then they brought it back, and now it has recouped to be about 5% down and a little over 1,600 points, 6.5% down as we speak right now. We have the IMF chief economist is urging targeted policies to stem the economic harm of the coronavirus. We have the Fed saying they're going to step up cash injections for banks to guard against market pressure. What would that be, market pressure? Well, you know, we saw just before Christmas, they started pouring money into this obscure thing called the repo market. They poured about $7 trillion into that because they were worried that was going to be the bubble that was going to burst the economy. And so there's no telling what they're going to do or what amount of money they're going to pump in. And it's interesting, at the same time, you know, when we look at these other things that are on their agenda, as the New York Post reports, and I talked about this a while back, the Fed is now quarantining physical dollars from China. And I tweeted about this over the weekend. I said, you understand that this has all been a part of the wargaming, you know, when they do the wargaming every year about biowarfare. And, of course, it could be an accident. It could be a deliberate act of war by a sovereign state, or it could be a terrorist act by some cult or something, right, individual group. But in every scenario, they always have the people who are the government agents and the contractors and so forth. The lesson that they're taught with each one of these, you've got to move more quickly, do more draconian quarantines and so forth, and you've got to accelerate the vaccine deployment. You got to make sure you do this without worrying about any side effects of that. That's the three takeaways in every single one of them. However, we have had some other scenarios. We've had Dark Winter 2 that I reported. I had a person who does White Hat Security who told me about that going back about a year ago. I've talked about that off and on a couple of times. In that scenario, what they did was they took a targeted country and they said, oh, all of the currency from that country is got cooties on it, so we can't pass that stuff around. Shut down that economy right now by taking away the physical dollars. But, of course, also moving us to a cashless society. There are things that are going to be left, you know, after we had the SARS and the MERS scares in Asia. It's not uncommon for Asians to walk around wearing masks now in public. And many times they'll do it all the time. Not even when there's alarm about a particular strain of flu. And so there are lasting societal conventions that are going to probably come out of this. And that's one of the things that Richard Hackett was saying. He said, this is going to transform America in ways that you don't realize. And, you know, we're already talking about, oh, we don't want to do handshakes. We'll do elbow rubs and foot taps and all this other kind of stuff. Maybe we'll wear masks all the time now in public. Maybe we'll be afraid to touch cash. And now we'll be scared into an electronic economy, right? Cashless society, which is where they wanted to shove us all the way along. Because, you know, you never let a crisis go to waste. You use it to push forward an agenda in a way that you didn't think you'd be able to push it before. Just another one of the anti-freedom, big government, authoritarian side effects that I think are going to come out of this. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. As we were talking about, you know, everybody's talking about toilet paper. Well, what about that other kind of toilet paper? You know, the green stuff that is printed by the Federal Reserve. You know, it may not be backed up by gold, but it is a way for us to be able to buy and sell anonymously. And that makes it a threat to the government that wants to know everything about everybody and to be constantly present in every single transaction. They don't want to have any kind of cash, even cash that is fiat paper. They want to make sure that they get rid of that. And so now we have the Fed is quarantining its own dollars, own U.S. dollars. If they're coming back from China, we're going to quarantine this. And as the New York Post is writing, the U.S. Federal Reserve has become quarantining physical dollars that it repatriates from Asia before recirculating them in the U.S. financial system as a precautionary measure against spreading the virus. And they also talk about how filthy paper money is. You don't want to use that stuff. You want to go cashless, right? A 2014 study by researchers at New York University, writes the New York Post, identified 3,000 types of bacteria on dollar bills due to how widely and frequently they change hands. Well, let me just ask you this. Maybe we don't want to use doorknobs. Maybe you don't want to get into taxi cabs. Maybe, hey, here's an idea. Maybe you don't want to ride public transportation. Can you imagine how filthy that is? Forget about the bacteria that you can't see everywhere. Look at the vomit on the floor of the subway. Think about that. That's what they're trying to push us into. But, you know, we've seen this story before, how the feds would, as part of the war on drugs, would confiscate people's cash because they would test it. Say, well, there's traces of cocaine on here. Doesn't mean you had anything to do with it. You know, cocaine, other drugs were present on almost all the paper money that had been in circulation. So you can play that kind of a game anywhere you want. But I have been told, can't verify this, but I have been told that it's not just the usual kind of quantitative easing, the kind of counterfeiting that the Federal Reserve does on a regular basis, right? That is counterfeiting. I mean, what the Federal Reserve is doing to our money supply is what every government has tried to do to its enemies during a time of war. Steal the plates and start printing money. You know, then you can tank the economy. Well, that's what the Federal Reserve does on a regular basis. We enable them to do this. But it gets even worse than that. During the financial crisis that we had before, I've been told, and again, I can't prove this, that the Obama administration was given the go-ahead to print twice as much money. You know, they would say, well, we're going to print X amount. If you look at the serial number, how do you know that that serial number is unique? Well, there is a small number, number 3 that's on there that was deleted on the fake ones. And that they doubled and tripled the number of pieces of paper that had even been decided to be printed. If you want to get rid of that, this would be a good way to get rid of that, wouldn't it? Just snatch it up. But I think the key thing here that we don't have to speculate on is the fact that they want to push us to a paperless society. And a lot of people are worried that we're going to go paperless in terms of toilet paper. There has been a run on toilet paper, and the shelves have been wiped out in many different places. It truly is an excrement hits the fan scenario at Costco and many others. As a matter of fact, over the weekend, there was a picture. Zero Hedge had the article. Somebody snapped a picture of a Costco sign saying that they were out of toilet paper and they wouldn't have any until a day, a month, and then the year they put in is 25020. So it's going to be out for centuries. They're not going to be able to get it back for centuries. Like scenes from a Mad Max movie, said many people as they were going to Costco. And this is the panic that we're now seeing. And understand, there's that picture of the sign that was put up at Costco. Understand that when we look at the economic panic, this is happening even before we have seen anything happening here in the United States. Now, most of it is tied to China shutting this down, making China the hub, which is what that was the big idea of the globalists. Let's make China the hub because, you know, there's no restrictions. As long as we pay off the communist Chinese leaders and give them a stake in these companies, then they can create the China price. They can set their tariffs really high so that nobody can sell into their market, 10 to 1. What we have for our tariffs, right? And then they can violate people's intellectual properties and copyrights. They can use slave labor. It's going to be a great deal. We're going to love this. As a matter of fact, they would even use that as a talking point. I've heard so many conservative and libertarian economists say, look, you don't want to have these kind of jobs here in the U.S. Let the Chinese do it. They'll work for practically nothing. You know, and you can, you know, take in each other's laundry, or you can have a job where you work on a computer terminal or something like that, and you'll just be fine. You'll be just fine, right? Except it doesn't work out that way. You have to have a manufacturing base, or you become dependent on this other country. And now we're seeing what that dependency looks like. Imagine if this were a war. They would have us over the barrel. But, of course, President Trump was blamed because he said we're too dependent on China. And now that our dependency on China is causing a global meltdown in the economy, President Trump is still to blame. And he told him, he said, look, you can bring your tariffs down to our level, which is one-tenth of what you're charging for the same goods if we sell them into your market. Or we can go to zero if you want. And if you don't want to do either one of those, then we will raise ours to the same level that you have so that we're on a equal basis here. And everybody in Wall Street accused President Trump of initiating a trade war. This is something that's been going on for decades. It is something that people need to pay attention to. And if you think that if you are one of the types of people who are going to believe everything the government tells you, let's just go back and take a look at the Skripal case. You know, forget 9/11 for a moment. I mean, we've analyzed that to the nth degree, but Skripal case, you know, the spy who was allegedly poisoned by Novichok in the UK just at the time that Nikki Haley and Theresa May wanted to put pressure on President Trump to escalate the war in Syria. I called it as BS from the very beginning. I've talked about this quite a bit, but there was an excellent article by Off Guardian's Kit Knightley. Summing up, said that the best way to demonstrate the absurdity of this is just to go down the official version. Sergei Skripal, Russian military intelligence officer, found guilty of spying for the UK in 2006, sentenced to 13 years in prison, then exchanged in 2010 to the UK. It's part of a spy swap. He settled in the UK, lived quietly there for 8 years or so. In 2018, with a presidential election looming, and just weeks before Russia was due to host the World Cup, Vladimir Putin decided to assassinate him for as yet obscure reasons. Why would he? The GU, Russia's military intelligence unit, dispatched two of their elite officers who proceeded to fly directly from Moscow under aliases that they had allegedly already employed and using Russian passports so that nobody would know where they came from. These alleged assassins carried with them two perfume bottles full of Novichok, allegedly one of the deadliest nerve agents ever devised. The quantity that they had in the perfume bottles would be enough to kill about 800,000 people. On arriving in the UK, these highly trained covert agents book a hotel with a closed-circuit TV camera on the front door. And the next day, March 3rd, they travel to Salisbury by train, allegedly to recon the area, then return to London, where they apparently observed by closed-circuit TV cameras the entire time. The following day, March 4th, they travel to Salisbury. This time, the master assassins walk to Skripal's house and somehow smear the liquid Novichok on the handle of his front door. No eyewitness, photograph, or piece of CCTV footage has ever been made publicly available. But we and no whereabouts of an open bottle of poison have ever been established. But we know exactly what happened. And how dare President Trump not bomb people on the command of Nikki Haley and Theresa May, right? Because of that. And it gets worse. This goes on for multiple pages, this absurdity. If people will buy this and not even talk about it, if people will buy 9/11, the government's official story about that. You don't think they can sell you anything?
You may be right. I may be crazy. Oh, but it just may be a lunatic you're looking for. It's too late to fight. It's too late to change.
Welcome back. I'm going to open up the phone lines. I want to see what the listeners take what your take is on the coronavirus, the politics, the economics, the liberty aspect of this, the geospatial intelligence tracking people, using this to push a cashless society. Are you concerned about this like I am? I mean, this goes beyond any health concerns. That remains to be seen. We're getting some very concerning information ahead of time about what the health concerns may be. But nevertheless, all of this stuff is going to be with us forever, even after this epidemic runs its course. Once we lose our freedoms it's hard to get them back. So if you want to join the program, that number is 888-201-2244. That's 888-201-2244. As a matter of fact, before we get into that, too, you look at the way Twitter is controlling speech that could be seen as criticizing Joe Biden. You know, don't make any remarks about elderly people who may have dementia issues. Who could they possibly be talking about? Yet we had more examples of this over the weekend from Joe Biden. Slurring his speech, saying we cannot get reelected, we cannot win this reelection. We can only reelect Donald Trump. Now, this is exactly the kind of phrases that indicate dementia. This is not stuttering. This is not a bad memory. And as I played for you last week, it is absolutely stunning. If you go back and look at Joe Biden in the debates in 2007, 13 years ago, look at how sharp he was. He was not a nice guy. I never liked his politics, and he was pretty ruthless. But he was intelligent. He was clever. Not so today. And this is just the latest incident of it. But of course, what they're doing on Twitter is to step this up. People are wondering, are they even going to ban OK Boomer? Well, at the moment, that's still going to be fine, but you're not going to be allowed to have any dehumanizing hate speech that's based on age, right? And as I pointed out last week, the first person to point out that Joe Biden had said, don't forget to vote on Super Thursday. Tuesday? When a person put out a tweet laughing about that, they got a one-day timeout from Twitter. That's the way they defend this. And they're now testing disappearing tweets. Well, I think they've been disappearing from my account and many other people that I know for quite some time. It's called shadow banning before they disappear you completely. It's also interesting, I think, that Joe Biden has picked up a supporter in Kamala Harris. Kamala Harris, the two-faced former prosecutor in California, has now done an about-face. And here's what she had to say in terms of endorsing Joe Biden. I'll play just a little bit of this for you. This is video clip number one.
Hey, everybody. So I'm here in Alabama. I arrived here to commemorate the 55th anniversary of Bloody Sunday. I'll be walking across the Edmund Pettus Bridge again with John Lewis and so many great, great leaders and fighters. I'm just here thinking about all the folks who for generations have fought and died for our civil rights and fought to help our nation achieve its ideals. And you guys know, we still have yet to achieve those ideals, but one of the greatest things about us is we are willing to fight to get there. So I just wanted you guys to know, because you've been supporting me for so long, and I just wanted you guys to know, I have decided that I am with great enthusiasm going to endorse Joe Biden for president of the United States.
Hey, remember me, Joe?
I really believe in him, and I have known him for a long time. One of the things that we need right now is we need a leader who really does care about the people and who can therefore unify the people. And I believe Joe can do that. I am supporting Joe because I believe that he is a man who has lived his life with great dignity. He is a public servant who has always worked for the best of who we are as a nation, and we need that right now. There is so much at stake in this election, guys.
All right, so you get the idea. She is auditioning. I know you need somebody who is young, who is female, to kind of balance you out there. You know, you're white, I'm black. Let me remind you that again. Of course, she was reminding everybody about the fact that she was black, and he was not really on board with that. Back in the debates, let's play video clip number two, and then we're going to go to callers. Video clip number two.
It's personal, and it was hurtful to hear you talk about the reputations of two United States senators who built their reputations and career on the segregation of race in this country. And it was not only that, but you also worked with them to oppose busing. And you know,
I thought he was
going to
unify us.
California,
I thought he really
cared
about people.
Was part of the second class to integrate her public schools. And she was bused to school every day. And that little girl was me. So I will tell you that on this subject, It cannot be an intellectual debate among Democrats. We have to take it seriously. We have to act swiftly. As Attorney General of California, I was very proud to put in place a requirement that all my special agents would wear body cameras.
All right, you get the idea. He was left flat-footed on that. That was a big hit against Joe Biden. And so now she's coming. Oh, he's just a great guy. He believes in people, and he can heal us and pull us together, except it was just the opposite not too long ago. And she said after that, you know, Joe Biden should pass that torch to me. That was what she said last June. And so now I guess she's hoping that if she becomes vice president, that he could literally pass that torch on to her in a very short period of time. Meanwhile, when we look at racial issues, we have a woman who was pardoned by President Trump is now going to be running as a Republican against John Lewis. And she's saying, we got to fight for justice for black America. Convicted felon Angela Stanton King, pardoned by President Trump earlier this year, announced that she's running for Congress. And again, she served a six-month home confinement sentence in 2007 for her role in a stolen vehicle ring. Today, she is a national best-selling author, widely acclaimed TV personality, and she's now running for office, saying she's been given a new lease on life by President Trump because of reviewing the case. All right, I want to go to your phone calls right now. I want to get your take on coronavirus because we now see that we're now still down about 5% on the day, and the minus 1,500 points off of the Dow Jones only looks good by comparison to what happened early this morning when it was down nearly 1,900 points over 7.25%. So the financial markets are being roiled. We've got all this being used, of course, for political purposes. And then there's the issue about liberty. So I want to go to our callers now. Let's go first to Chad in Seattle. You're right there at Ground Zero, Chad. Tell us about it.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Knight. Well, what I've seen here is most of our Asian people are now, it's more cultural for everybody to wear masks around.
Yeah.
I'm right here at the university, and now all the Asian people they're all wearing masks, and it's not because they're afraid of it. It's just because it's culturally.
It's become a cultural thing. Exactly. We got to take a quick break. Hang on. I want to get you on the other side of the break. Yeah, my wife and I were in Costco this last week, and the only people we saw wearing masks is one Asian family that was there. We were not buying toilet paper, by the way.
Of deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Welcome back, and we're taking phone calls. We want to find out, get the pulse of the public. And we have, if you want to join the program, that number is 888-201-2244. We have Chad in Seattle, who is right there at Ground Zero. And as Chad was just telling us before we went to break, it's now become a standard cultural thing for Asians to wear face masks. They've been conditioned from prior panic outbreaks of SARS and MERS that they wear that on a regular basis. And so the question is, how is this going to transform American society? How is it going to be used to transform us? We already see that the pushback against vaccine mandates without informed consent took a major hit because of the coronavirus panic. Is this something that is now going to, these mandates without informed consent, is that going to rush through our culture like a virus? I think it will. I think that's going to be one of the things that's going to come out of this. Of course, we still need to fight against that. It's only going to make all of these health situations worse if they're able to mandate these vaccines. And of course, it turns you into a slave. If you can't have the decision about what medicines you want to take, and that's another part of it, or what medicines you would rather not take. In other words, they say when you want to take particular types of medicine or you want to use your own stem cells to treat your own diseases, they say, no, you can't do that. And then on the flip side, they say, but you must take this, even though you don't want to because of what you know about it. You're nothing more than a slave. You're nothing more than their livestock. Chad, what else is going on there in Seattle since you're right there at Ground Zero? Tell us about it.
Oh, surveillance. That's really the big thing I wanted to talk about. I mean, like I said, with the mask, I also think that everyone should start wearing masks, start wearing hats, start wearing eye protection, start wearing some kind of sunglasses or just something that they cannot scan your retinas. That technology is here on the streets right now. It's very scary when, you know, as someone who's worked inside of Amazon and is now still in cybersecurity, scary out here. And it is coming to America fast.
Yeah, that can cut both ways. I mean, we just had some guys wearing, you know, medical masks rob a casino. You know, any other time if somebody came into a casino with a mask, they'd say, hey, these guys, security, go to these guys and check them out. But it didn't raise any flags because of that. So this could cut both ways, couldn't it, Chris? Or Chad? Right.
Yes, exactly. And I also would like to bring up one quick thing. A lot of our brothers and sisters in Hong Kong are being disappeared and going back to mainland, you know, and dying of the coronavirus.
Yes, yes, exactly. So, and had that article here on my desk, how they have stepped up. China has used this under cover of this panic to step up their arrests of other people. And, you know, as you look at this, that kind of tyranny is going to be around even after this this epidemic disappears. And that's the thing we should all be concerned about. Absolutely. Spot on, Chad. We really do need to be concerned about how they're going to use this to step up surveillance and tracking of people, because now they have, in the past when they would do it, it was difficult for them to make a compelling case that the public could buy. Now, if they can get the public panicked enough about this, the public will be begging for it, as Henry Kissinger and others have talked about, kind of a globalist agenda. Oh, they'll be begging for it. Well, now people are going to be begging for this. You know, we really want you to have those apps so that you can track people's travel history and, you know, match who they've been in contact with. That's exactly what they're going to be looking at. All right, let's go to, thank you, Chad. Let's go to Chris in Kentucky. Chris, thank you for holding. Go ahead.
Hey, Dave. Nice to talk to you for the first time.
Well, thank you for calling. Appreciate that.
And you're a very accurate reporter. Coronavirus, hype. We've got three cases total here in Kentucky. You've got three in Harrison, Fayette County near Lexington, one case here in Louisville. The news had the governor on all half the morning what to do about exactly what the last caller was talking about, going through surveillance, surrendering your liberty. They're hyping up about the big event of thunder over Louisville 2 weeks before the Kentucky Derby here in Louisville, where I live.
Mm-hmm.
They keep going with this, and they say, what are you going to do? They get that fear, like you said, fear itself. They're going to put that fear into people. Well, if you would like to get into the event and scare people bad enough and scare them that you're going to get the coronavirus, well, you better roll your sleeve up and get your mandate vaccine before you can get into the track.
Exactly.
I see where this is coming.
And we got op-ed pieces, like I pointed out last week. You got op-ed pieces out there saying, well, you know, let's talk about airlines. Let's say that you can't fly on an airline unless you prove that you've been vaccinated for whatever they're afraid of this week, right? And that's coming. That's what they're going to do. They're going to use this, and this is why I've talked to people who are libertarians, who are conservatives, and it's like, well, we got to, just like the Yoho, right, down in Florida. We got a pandemic. We got to do something about this right now. Can't worry about vaccines right now. We got to address this issue. You establish that as a precedent. And this is the worst possible outcome that could come from this, because it's not going to help anything. It's only going to make it worse. But you're going to normalize the idea that the government can use vaccine records to control your movement, to make sure that you can't even go to work. You can't go into a public place. You're not going to be able to go to work. You're not going to be able to go to school. You're not going to be able to travel if you haven't produced your vaccine record. My daughter is looking at what kind of career she wants to do. And I said, well, you better stay out of any kind of medical stuff, because you go into anything around medicine and they're going to mandate that you get the full slate of vaccines. And I don't want you getting that, because that's going to harm your health. They make sure that they do that because they want to make sure that all the medical professionals have said, well, I had it done and see, I'm still okay, because they didn't have a reaction or a reaction yet. And so then it's like, well, I did it, so you can do it too. And that's what they're pressuring all the people who work in medicine. But they're going to normalize. They're going to take that across all professions, work, school, travel, everything.
Absolutely. And like you said about the tracking for miles, tracking your miles, well, they just built a toll bridge here across the Ohio River. There was a fully paid off but they're still tracking your miles. You still got to pay the toll, even though it's all paid off. They're tracking your miles. I refuse to go over that bridge.
Oh, yeah. Same thing around here in Austin. Every bit of new construction that they're doing here, they won't even maintain the roads that are here, but the new construction is all toll roads because they want to condition you to paying to travel. And then in addition, the only other thing that's new are the traffic lights on the ancillary roads because they want to punish you if you don't get on their toll roads. And so I'm spending a lot of time setting at traffic lights here in Austin because I refuse to be controlled that way. It's just like when I go to fly, I always make sure that they pat me down because I refuse to play that game too. I want to be a I want to be a monkey wrench in this machinery of tyranny. Anything else, Chris?
Well, I'll give your other callers a chance, but I'll keep monitoring the media about this coronavirus in Louisville and keep InfoWars informed.
All right, appreciate that. Thank you, Chris. Let's go to William in Oregon. Thank you for holding, William. Go ahead.
Hello, David. How's it going?
Doing good. You're right up there where it's pretty hot as well. Oregon's not as much as Seattle, but what do you see in your area?
I see where I wanted to talk about yesterday when I went to not just at Costco where all the toilet paper is out, that Walmart too. Yesterday I went there with my dad, and the whole aisle where the toilet paper is just completely wiped out, gone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's crazy. And I just want to talk about Kate Brown. Declares a state of emergency here in Oregon. There's 14.
Oh, yeah. She's the governor there in Oregon, and she has been in our news in the past with the things that she did in relation to the Malheur standoff and the authoritarian orders that she had about that. But what's she doing now with this coronavirus? I can only imagine.
It's crazy. She's following the state of California and Washington state of emergency. I don't see why she needs to do that. The other people, you know, American people just need to calm down, relax. Don't get all panicked. It ain't nothing serious.
Well, don't you think that's interesting? I mean, when you look at how they went to the nth degree to make sure nobody was concerned about Ebola during the Obama administration, and now everything is emergency everywhere. You got Austin declaring a state of emergency, shutting down South by Southwest as well over the weekend. We'll be right back with more of your calls, 888-201-2244. Yeah, Doctor, my eyes have seen the mandated vaccines. My eyes have seen the fact that for 33 years, after they were told, well, we're going to give immunity to the vaccine companies, but we'll set up an arbitration process, a secretive vaccine court that most people in America don't know anything about. And they will go through a process of arbitration for people who have been injured or killed by adverse vaccine reactions that the mainstream media will tell you don't ever happen, right? Except that they've spent billions of dollars just in the arbitration process, not in a real trial. And as a result of that, they said, well, we'll set this up and then we will task this federal agency here with doing testing to improve the safety and the efficacy of vaccines. And so the Dell Bigtree last year pointed out they called their bluff on it. They said, we asked them what research they've done to see about adverse vaccine reactions, including autism, any links about that. What data have you guys collected? They refused to comply, so they sued. And they came back and said, well, for the last 33 years, we haven't compiled any data. You see, the World Health Organization, doctors, one after the other, saying, you know, we really should test some of this stuff. We should do more to test some of this stuff. We should do some long-range tests of this stuff. Now, that is happening. And so when you look at this disease, real or imagined, is this being hyped up into being something that it more than it is, or is it much more serious than any flu that we've ever had? Either way, to mandate untested vaccines on the public is only going to exacerbate this. Just look what happens with the regular flu shot. We know that, first of all, they don't know what strain it's going to be. They have to manufacture it ahead of time. Well, even if they were to begin to manufacture something that addressed the coronavirus strain, it is mutating. Already we've got two different variants of it, this novel coronavirus. And so What's to say that by the time they get it manufactured in quantity, it hasn't mutated to something else? And then when you inject people with the flu vaccines, you get adverse reactions. You get a challenge to the immune system that weakens it. And as a result, it's not uncommon for people who get the flu vaccine to get the flu because of their weakened immune system. So regardless of what's going on with this, it's only going to exacerbate the problem. And then we have the economic and political and liberty issues that are involved in that as well. So I want to talk to callers who are on the line. Before we do, real quickly, I just want to remind you to prepare. Prepare for yourself, prepare for your family, because just as we see with CPAC, they're going to tell the politicians, they'll tell Ted Cruz, they'll tell a congressman, this is the name of the individual. Were you in contact with him? I'm sure they told all of the big politicians who were at CPAC, but they're not telling the attendees, right? Lee Stranahan tweeted out, he said, I'd like to know who this is. I'd like to know if I had contact with this individual, but he's not allowed to know. Ted Cruz is allowed to know. So there's going to be a double standard. It doesn't matter whether you're Republican. The difference is government and everybody else. Because the government will take care of itself. They're not going to take care of you. That's why you need to make sure that you have what you need to protect your family. And it's not just toilet paper. You better make sure that you've got vitamins and minerals. Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix is a great way to start. We got a lot of different products. But take something that is going to maintain your health instead of challenging your immune system. Build it up. You also want to make sure that you've got storable food. And we have that at InfoWars. And our supplier has now upped their production by a factor of three. We still have a large waiting list there, but get in the list if you don't have storable food. Prepare with food. Prepare that you have clean water. Make sure you've got a gravity feed water filter. We don't know what's going to happen with this. It is spiraling out of control economically, politically, and in every other way. So take a look at the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. This is now a time. This is a wake-up call. You still have an opportunity to prepare. Got a window to prepare. Make sure you use that. All right, let's go back to our callers. Tim in Georgia, you've been holding. Thank you for holding, Tim. Go ahead.
Hi, David Knight. Can you hear me?
Yes, I got you.
David Knight, I love you. You are the Orson Welles and the voice of reason of our generation, and I thank you, sir.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I live right in between the port of Savannah, Georgia, and the port of Brunswick, Georgia, and I-95 runs through my backyard. And I work at the port, and I got to tell you, it is not good what we're seeing happen here. Stuff is leaving the country, but there's really nothing coming in. We're getting a few imports of farm equipment and stuff like that from Europe. But I'm watching flatbed trucks that come in and unload that usually leave with loads, and they're all leaving with nothing.
Wow.
That situation is not good.
And I've seen reports, Tim, about how the ships are stacking up because they're empty and they're just kind of waiting in China. They drop the loads off and they don't have anything to pull back, so they're just kind of parking it for that as well.
That's exactly right, yes, sir. I wanted to say too that we need to back our president, President Donald Trump. God bless him. We need to back him. We need to listen to him. America needs to stand together because they have pulled out all the stops, folks.
Yes,
Last couple weeks, I have seen a lot of military equipment being moved down this interstate in both directions. I've seen a lot of brand-new equipment that has the FEMA logo painted on it in white letters, and it's been painted blue with the white with the letters in white, and it says FEMA. And I've seen a lot of equipment. Before I became a truck driver, I worked in the test spray-dry industry for 15 years, and I used to work in a laboratory, and I used to deal with Salmonella, E. coli, and a lot of other things that are dangerous to human beings, and I used to work in a hazardous environment for that 15 years almost on a daily basis. And I got to tell you, what's being perpetrated against the world, the Western world, and the American people is just unconscionable. We have lots of enemies, China and Russia. The American public is beat by propaganda to think they're not. They are our enemy. It's not
That's
so
right.
much the people. It's their government.
That's right.
And we had all better understand that they have a link into every facet of our society, into every news desk, into everything,
yes.
except for InfoWars.
Yes.
You guys are the only news source left that is not tainted by them trying to take over and dominate the world. And I love you for that. I love Alex Jones for that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's pretty interesting to see how Bloomberg would cover for the Chinese. And, of course, the Bloomberg organization was doing that throughout the beginning even of this coronavirus. It is very alarming what is happening. And that was what I was most concerned about from the very beginning. As I said, I don't want to get swept up into a FEMA camp quarantine situation because I've seen how FEMA operates when there's a natural disaster. I talked about how my son did a video project comparing FEMA's operations on the coast of North Carolina when a hurricane came through versus a localized disaster where FEMA did not get involved and the community handled it with tornadoes that happened closer to where we lived. It was a world of difference, and they made everything so much worse. Absolutely something to be concerned about. Thank you, Tim. Let's go to Joel in Ohio. Thank you for holding, Joel. Go ahead.
A lot of information. I'll try to make it quick, but I started looking into Quest Diagnostics and their ties to China, which Quest is one of the companies that the government's going to be using to test everybody for the coronavirus. Mm. Well, it turns out they're tied to KingMed, which is doing the testing for China in China. And a lot of other companies. They also, KingMed worked with Cleveland Clinic in 2014. Quest Diagnostics started the Global Diagnostic Network, which they call the GDN, in 2018. KingMed is one of the charter members of that. And also some other U.S. companies have been working with KingMed. So it sounds like they just want to have a huge data bank of everybody, regardless of this virus.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Even to the extent, you know, Bill Gates, so we're going to have a test. You can just swab your nose and send it in. And then if they find something positive, they're going to notify the authorities on you. First of all, that's enough to alarm me about it. Because, like I said, I don't want to get caught up in a FEMA camp. I will self-quarantine, but I don't want to be caught up into a FEMA camp. And then the other aspect of that is you don't think they're going to take your DNA and put that in a database? I mean, that is a real possibility. Absolutely.
Also,
well, thank you.
February.
Sorry, go ahead. All right, we're just about out of time. I want to get to Danny in, I think we lost Joel. I want to get to Danny in Arkansas, who's been holding. Thank you for holding, Danny. Go ahead. We've got about 49 seconds.
Yeah, good morning. Just wanted to share with you a story I had when I went to the VA Medical Center this morning here in Fayetteville. They had some officials there with surgical masks on that I think are more designed to keep you from getting spittle or hairs into an operation than they are to keep the coronavirus from getting out.
Yeah.
And they're asking you three questions. Have you been outside the country? Have you been sick in the past week? Or do you know anyone that's been sick? And then you just answer no to all those questions and, oh, well, welcome right in. It's almost as if you went to a speakeasy and said, and they had the passport that is, I don't know.
What's yeah, you got the special, we're just about out of time. But yeah, that's the way it's going to work. Of course, we'll have to wait and see what happens with this. I'm very concerned with our poor record on civil liberty. Thanks for listening.